From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Well, Rick Fournier is known as the trails guru about town. His trail building expertise is a big part of why Park City was put on the map a long time ago as the first IMBA Gold Ride Center. IMBA, of course, is International Mountain Bike Association. Charlie Sturgis is the director of Mountain Trails Foundation, and he possesses the insight to read the upcoming trends in trails, what works best to keep everyone playing fairly in the sandbox or on the trails. And he oversees the operation. Both are joining us in the studio this morning to chat about a survey that they hope to get widespread participation in filling out. It gets into the nitty-gritty of the e-bike and what they mean for a trail system that may be already stressed with the number of people loving on it. Charlie and Rick, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning.
Well, first things first. You published this survey that you've been working really hard on, I know you have, to get it just right, so it's not leading, so it's unbiased. You published it Friday. You've had 600 responses. It's only Wednesday, so 5 days later.
So let's do something even more first. We're looking for answers on e-mountain biking,
yes,
specific to trails. So Mountain Trails is very supportive of the e-bike and its use as a transportation alternative. So, and even when we first wrote the survey, we used the term e-bike versus e-mountain bike. So we want to make sure that people really understand the e-bike situation in town, even though it, like the SHARE program has some of its own flaws. We're really interested in the e-mountain bike and how it should be addressed on dirt trails in the Park City area.
That's a really good point. And I didn't even make that distinction because...
Nah, I know you didn't.
So, whoops.
Yeah.
Because I know what the survey is about. And
right.
So, they are two very different things. I mean, I know lots of people who may be opposed to having e-mountain bikes on dirt trails own their own e-bikes that they ride on paved pathways and... that sort of thing, using in the commuter sort of situation. In fact, I'm one of those people.
Yeah. And, the original ordinance that the city did almost five years ago, something like that, it was all based on the idea that we're really talking about more transportation corridors and so forth. And then the e-mountain bike became very, very quickly became a presence in a... there is a lot of pressure to respond to how we're going to deal with e-mountain bikes, which for mountain trails, we consider ourselves a non-motorized building and maintaining trail organization, and especially multi-use non-motorized. So the e-mountain bike certainly poses a dilemma.
I'd also add that this survey was specifically focused on Class 1 pedal assist e-mountain bikes because that is what we're talking about at this point. That's what the bike manufacturers are putting out there, and that's what could possibly end up on our trail system.
And for us who are holdbacks and we're still using our unicycles and wooden wheels, what is differentiating a Class 1 e-mountain bike?
Well, I think there's a lot of misconceptions on the three classes of e-mountain bikes. Class 1 is pedal assist. You have to be pedaling to engage the motor. Maximum speed is 20 miles an hour. Class 2 e-mountain bikes are throttle assist. Again, the top speed is 20 miles an hour. Class 3, and this is something that I didn't realize until I got deep into the survey, Class 3 is also pedal assist. But the maximum speed is 28 miles an hour. I had assumed that it was throttle assist just like 2, but it is not.
And one of the things that I've noticed and appreciated when I first looked at that survey is it's both informative and also helping for the Mountain Trails Association to really get a great understanding of the breadth of knowledge of the community. Really help us dive into putting together this survey and the time and energy that you did.
Well, as you mentioned, Pete, I think we were really trying to get a sense of public perception as well as the public's knowledge on the different classes of e-bikes, as well as opinion. And we went into this trying to be as unbiased as possible. We really didn't want to have any leading questions. We reached out to a couple of folks in the bike business, John Olden and Tom Noerker. So we really wanted to keep this as unbiased as possible.
And I think it's really important to point out that, we have taken probably some grief for our current stand, if there's a stand that we have, is towards favoring the exclusion of e-mountain bikes from the trail system so far, except for where the ordinance does allow for mobility limitation, and currently, last fall, they changed it to 65 and up. So Dave Hanskin and I qualify, so we're pretty happy about that.
He qualifies in spades.
Yeah. But I think it's really important that, we have a lot of friends here in the bike shop, bike business, and this decision to exclude e-mountain bikes has an impact on them, certainly in terms of sales and rentals both. It affects the visitor experience to some degree, and we don't want to have a decision made that is somewhat maybe irreversible, and also one that we haven't done everything we can to foresee all the possible consequences ahead of time.
Which is certainly one of the things that is most admirable about mountain trails, is you're really trying to balance all these mitigating factors and voices, and to really, how do you do that? I mean, this survey obviously is a part of that, but what are you looking for in to balance all of these opinions and aesthetics and, you know, sales and politics?
Wild ass guess.
Speak the truth.
No, I mean, we're definitely we'll be taking a hard look at the data when we have it. That's why we're asking where people are from. I think the Summit County residents should have more weight in the decision. We hope that we'll have several thousand responses from the Wasatch Front as well, and that's going to change some of the weighting of what percentage of people want e-mountain bikes. But we do think one of the big decisions will be, if you live here and really don't feel like it's a good idea, then we're going to be considering that far more heavily than maybe the out-of-county vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, our trail system certainly is getting taxed as we have. I mean, we are a mecca, really, globally. I mean, I've been in different countries, and they know about Park City. Park City really got put on the map with that IMBA Gold Level Ride Center designation a long time ago, the first one. And you held the first Gold Ride Center designation for how many years before they added on a second? And now there are like 10 or something in the country.
Yeah, it was probably 4 or 5 years, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah. And so we really got put on the map, and lots of people come here. It's a destination. It's a huge part of our economy now. And I'm wondering about what you think about, we have some old trails in town, kind of the old school where I go on a Saturday because I know they're, really steep and people aren't going to be riding them, or they just don't know about them because everyone's going to the Mid-Mountain and to Armstrong. And so what about dispersing people on the trails? One of the big concerns about e-bikes is that our trail system is already too crowded. So are we doing a good job of dispersing people on the trails? And could we redesign some of the trails in Rick Fournier fashion such that they would be more accommodating? Or do we take those old school steep trails and put the e-bikes there?
I can tell you. I'm not going to speak for Rick on that, but let me split this question with Rick. First off, one of our deals has been disbursement, and we've tried to do a lot. Just last week, I was down talking to Wasatch County, both the mayor from Heber and Midway. Our feeling is, one of our big feelings is, get our neighbors involved. Wasatch County is really looking at making a push towards more trails. They certainly have done a great job with Riverview. We built the Wow Trail over there for them. These are all attempts at spreading people around and having more places to go experience. High Star is a great opportunity. So I think on a regional basis, we're helping to facilitate some of that, and we certainly support both South Summit and Wasatch Trail Foundation. So anyhow, at a higher level, we're doing what we can to move people around. I'm going to let Rick speak to the idea of what we're trying to do more locally, because I think some of the stuff, like even up in Bonanza Flats, is going to be really important next summer.
Well, as you mentioned, trail use has grown significantly over the last few years, and you know, it really has taxed our trail system. We're seeing a lot more degradation of our trails, and the way that we're looking at trying to you know, improve upon that is a lot of meaningful connections. You know, our trail system is wide and varied and covers a lot of terrain. You know, there are some areas where we can make connections that'll help improve the overall flow of the system. And then, you know, directionality is going to be a huge part of what we do going forward. I think we've put in probably 5 trails over the last several years that have been directional. That trend will continue. That really makes a big difference, you know, from a safety standpoint. But what we don't want to do is take all of our favorite older trails and retro them to the point where it kills the experience for the user. So, you know, you have to kind of walk a fine line there.
And you threw out a topic that we're all curious about, Bonanza. And there's going to be some grooming for the winter there and some access questions. How does one access and utilize the new trails?
Well, okay, so we're queuing up, and with Dave Hanscom sitting here in the office with us, I'm sure he's going to be excited to hear this, because actually Dave and I set races up on Bonanza Flats during low snow years a long, long time ago. I think we probably did 2 or 3 races up there, right, Dave? Something like that? So anyways, it is going to be pretty exciting. Rick and Logan from the city have been actually marking in and came out with about 4K, of course, up there.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah, and they're looking at, from what I understand from talking with Logan this morning, they're going to be looking at starting to groom up there next week. There's still issues about how to get up there, how often will they groom. So this is definitely a startup, and my understanding is that there will be more information posted next week on the city site, and I'm sure it'll be followed up on things like tuna and so forth as people get up there and experience that. Rick, what are they using for machinery up there for starters?
They're using the Talisker Cat to track pack the course at this point, and then the city has a snowmobile and a drag that they'll be using, so the combination.
Yeah, they're using a Ginsu style drag.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's a groomer that Bob Radke built last year.
He does a great job in his groomer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, not to get away from the survey, but we do want to talk about winter trails. So let's wrap up the survey, and I just want to mention that you've taken some of the things that you've heard from a lot of public comment, and you've included them in the survey, like why people who are supportive of e-mountain bikes on trails, Class 1 e-mountain bikes on single-track trails, is the following. They're fun, allows you to cover more miles, mobility limitations for those maybe recovering from injury, or seniors age 65 plus, enhances the visitor tourist experience, gets more people on bikes, acts as an equalizer. Technology is there, why not take advantage of it? And then you also, and you ask people to, you know, to say which of the reasons that they feel most strongly about. And then you also say if you believe they shouldn't be on the trails, safety issues due to additional weight and speed, because it has a motor and our trails are non-motorized. It enables unskilled riders to get in over their heads. It introduces a new trail user group, and the trails are already crowded, and so on. So all these sort of any reason that anyone has come up with on either side of the issue, and it is probably the most controversial issue that you've seen, well, other than dogs off or on leash, at Mountain Trails Foundation. It's all kind of included in the survey. So you can go to mountaintrails.org to find the survey.
You can go to our Facebook and find the link. Okay. You actually, Pete was nice enough to put it on Park City Runners. Mm-hmm. It will go out as a complete e-blast, and we are expecting it to be shared through other databases down on the Wasatch Front as well. we're really going to go widespread as much as we can with this. We did ask the question about where you live so that, once again, if you're a local resident and you have a strong opinion, that that is more heavily weighed in the final decision-making process, potentially. But we want to know what that trend is around us, because that's our future as well. What's going on at Wasatch State, or Wasatch County, Salt Lake County, down in Draper, because Corner Canyon does allow them. Mm-hmm. So we want to see what's going on.
Yeah, great. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Charlie Sturgis and Rick Fournier from the Mountain Trails Foundation and Winter Trails. I read the posts that people, the comments on your Facebook page. People just idolize you guys for what you do with Winter Trails, and I think it's pretty cute. And really, I mean, you do a great job, and you post these wonderful posts on the page. If you're a listener and you love winter trails, you really ought to like the Mountain Trails Foundation Facebook page, because Rick, you and your crew do a great job of posting nearly every day, maybe 5 days a week.
It's every day.
No,
oh,
it's
every
day.
Yeah. Okay. And you post pictures for those of us who would never be out skiing at 6:30 in the morning.
A lot of sunrise
or we're in a drywalled office with no windows.
The windows
exactly.
Painted on it.
Yeah. So, but I want to start kind of wide and then get down to some of the details of winter grooming. Outside of the Park City area, because you guys know more about Wasatch and out in the outer lying reaches of Summit County, are there other trails systems groomed during the winter?
You mean for cross-country skiing?
Yeah.
To start with, cross-country multi-use.
There we go.
Okay, because the fat biking thing is, you know, we're definitely probably unique in that we're on single-track trails for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have your Beaver Creek, Mill Creek, certainly skiing Muir Lake Highway, which I'm sure Dave, I can tell you, he's been up there a few times probably this year. Our great experience, Soldier Hollow is a great experience, and certainly White Pine has, you know, our local 20 kilometers going at this point. We are blessed with almost, and everything's getting set in town, we're blessed with almost 65 kilometers, I think, of non-fee, multi-use, groomed winter trails.
Wow. And then 20 at White Pine.
Pay for. And if you're using the rail trail and the rail trail set, then, of course, you have a whole bunch more. We have a bigger cross-country program, and certainly, once again, with Dave sitting in the office and having been the old owner of White Pine when we had like 8K of track in town, and we thought we were living large, we are so far ahead of that deal and so far ahead of anything else probably in Utah for sure.
Yeah.
Rick, what's your thoughts on fat biking and trails?
Well, no, I mean, it's hard to believe that just 15 years ago we weren't doing anything in Round Valley. I think it was probably around 2006 we started experimenting out there on some of the old double track and just to see if it was even viable. And here we are, you know, 15 years later, and we've got close to 30 kilometers of trail when we have the snow out there. So pretty amazing how far we've come. Obviously, you know, a lot of different user groups and new user groups that have popped up over the years, fat biking being the predominant one these days. And we certainly have tried to do our best to accommodate those folks as well. We're currently up to 14 miles of single track that we groom for fat biking.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing. I definitely also follow your Facebook posts, but I am looking for a little bit more of that Steve Irwin getting down to the snow and crikey, you can see the snow here has been, and then identifying the species of groomer and taste of the sampling of the snow.
Yeah.
So it just a personal request, maybe you can put that out there to the team. And really bring us along in the journey.
Do you want to hear more about like vole poop
yes.
and so forth? Okay, just checking. We can do it.
We'll definitely try to focus on some of those things going forward. But I have to give credit to a good friend of ours, Alex Stoy, who worked with us for a few seasons, probably 4 or 5 years ago. He was the one that really infused a lot of humor and wit into our trail reports and really got the ball rolling there. And it's hard to top Stoy's reports, but we do our best.
Yeah. Stoy does a great job of making sure everything is hilarious.
You know, so. Dave was sitting here reminding me that also Jeremy Ranch is out there. Mm-hmm. I did forget to mention that. And we did, you know, have a ski program at Jeremy Ranch a long, long time ago. Then it went away. And they've been back now for about, I think, 3 years when snow has allowed. Right. So it's great to have them back in the action.
And then it's really neat even to see, and I won't mention these private communities, but cross-country skiing has grown so much in its popularity, and fat biking, that some of these private communities are putting in a little trail network that I guess they personally groom, or I don't know, they must. And that's really fun. And of course, the public can't access those, but they are there just showing again the popularity of winter trails. So with single track snow mountain biking, I remember that in the beginning when snow bikes were just kind of coming onto the scene, there would be a call for go out, and, you know, after a storm,
track
go out and take your snowshoes and pack it down. We got to pack it down for a few days. And then it seemed like you tried one sort of machine and it didn't really work. And now you've got another sort of machine that's really sweet. So take us through that.
Yeah, we tried a motorcycle with fat tires called the Rokon, which they use in the Midwest. Well, the Midwest has rolling terrain and not nearly the same type of snow that we get here, and it failed miserably, long story short. So we've always been researching, trying to come up with a better way to groom single track, and last year we found this great groomer called the Snow Blaster from a company out of the Midwest, because that's where they kind of spearheaded the whole fat biking scene. And it's got this crazy V-plow on it that literally removes a few inches of the new snow off the top of the surface and frees up the hard pack underneath and leaves a nice corduroy surface. We also bought it's almost like a junior snowmobile with a powerful engine that's probably a third the size of a normal snowmobile that enables us to navigate the switchbacks more easily, and if we get stuck, it's very easy to pull it out. So those two things have really helped. It's all about packing the snow immediately after the storm. And then the other thing is, once we've packed it, if we can get folks to stay off it for a night, it really allows it to set up and creates a much firmer surface the next day. So we always try to encourage folks to just stay off it immediately after a storm, after it's been groomed.
How much do the local bike shops participate in funding this kind of grooming since they're selling the bikes? I know that Storm Cycle in the beginning kind of went out and they would help groom.
Yeah, so Storm Cycles, Todd and his crew out there did a great job of trying to jump in and help out a couple of years ago. They had a timber sled, which is, once again, pretty difficult. You need a skilled driver for that to be able to use one. So I think we used the timber sled 3 years total, maybe, but the timber sled's not ideal. This is really a very hardy activity for the groomer. This makes sitting on a snowmobile and doing a normal grooming for cross-country skiing look rather benign. Being out there on single track with a snowmobile and a drag on tight corners and so forth. Thanks to Todd and Juan and those guys out at Storms, they truly stepped up. But otherwise, to answer your question, really at this point, no one's really kicking in other than just, once again, your local donor, which we can't tell you how much we appreciate all the local support we get for both activities. So it's really super helpful.
And that was a challenging choice of trails, too, for them to pick, with Glenwild and the sharp turns that are just numerous there. Where are the single track snow bike routes this winter?
So starting out of the ice rink, we've got Rambler, the Matt's Flat single track. Actually, Rambler along the Highway 40 side all the way to Ramble On, and then it peels off onto the Silver Quinn Wide Groom Trail. We've also got Rambler descending down into the valley proper, Radiman Ridge, Tin Man, Happy Gilmore. New this year, I don't want to forget the P-Dog loop. Porky Climb Down Dog has become a great fat bike mm-hmm. loop. And when we designed the trail, we actually had that in mind, believe it or not. But new this year, we've added Backslide, which is mostly north-facing, and we felt like it would hold snow really well. And a great addition to the mix. So
And what's the interface that you would ideally want to see with fat biking and cross country skiers, and then especially runners. A lot of runners love going on those trails. Are we encouraging, discouraging multi-use on those trails? What's the ideal?
We're a multi-use organization. We definitely promote that. But there are things that folks can do to just make the situation as good as possible for all users. And again, getting back to the allowing the trail to firm up before, runners are out there, post-holing up the trail. If we can get a nice firm surface, that just makes it more enjoyable for everybody. I can tell you the fat bikers absolutely hate when it gets completely post-holed up. Mm-hmm. And it really is not fun for the runners once that freezes and they're trying to run on a surface that's that uneven. So it's all about patience and just giving it a little time, and then it goes a long way.
Will there be any kind of demarcation, freshly groomed or green light, yellow light, red light?
We've added new signs to most of the trails that we are grooming for fat biking this year. And basically they're a flip panel sign like you'd see up at the resorts for closures. It says no post holes, no ruts when we've got it closed. And we'll run a chain across the closure. Usually leave it for the night for 12 hours. And then if it's firm the next day, we'll pull the closure and you're good to go. So.
And same goes for Nordic trails, skiing, cross-country trails that, of course, people can walk on and fat bike on, but not until they're firm. It really ruins it.
True. Yeah. And also, I think it's fair to point out that, once again, runners, hikers, and your dogs staying off the classic lanes when we actually can put them in, which we can't always put them in, so it's nice. When they're good, it's really nice. And my newest pet peeve recently, just being out in Round Valley a little bit, is we love that your dogs are out there, right? Some people call it Hound Valley. But we really need the chewed up sticks to stay off the track.
That's my pet peeve too.
Yeah, that's.
I get hungry. Please.
Yeah, it does get. It is hazardous. But if we are working in low snow years, which when you talk with Dave, he and I have gone through many low snow years together. Anything that's dark that's on the snow is going to make it melt faster. And so even if it's not a problem today, it will be a problem in February. It will create areas that are going to be bare sooner than the rest of the trail. And those things just become a hazard. They become a hazard, difficult on the machinery. So enough be said. We love having, it's great to be able to have your dog out there and do the right thing as a dog owner, but sticks left on the track, we grind them up with the cat. It just doesn't really work out.
Yeah, the operators, I can tell you from experience, don't like to get off the machine several times to toss sticks off the trail. And if we do miss them, especially when we're pulling a drag in low snow years, they can get caught in the grooming equipment, and it leaves a nice big rut down the middle of the trail where it's hung up in the drag. So,
right.
Or recently you posted a photo of a poop bag stuck in the drag. That kind of just is kind of messy work at that point. So. Being aware is really all it really takes out there.
Right. Okay. Well, you two, since Charlie, you brought up the fact that Dave Hanscom is in the studio about a dozen times, we better get him on air.
I don't know. Dave's got time. He's waiting for it to warm up a little bit out there.
He's already
been skiing. Yeah, damn. Yeah. Well, that's right. Yeah.
So we brought him off the track early to come in here. So, he's wasting precious time sitting here listening to you.
Well, he'd tell you he's probably wasted a lot of time doing that so far. So.
All right. Well, Charlie Sturgis, Rick Fournier, the Mountain Trails Foundation, thanks so much for joining us. And again, go to the Mountain Trails Facebook page to find the link to the survey, or the mountaintrails.org website to do the same. When is the deadline?
Really, we're hoping to run this for a couple of months.
Okay.
We don't have to have a deadline in a survey, but I think we'll see some real trends in by the first of the year. I hopefully have some results that we can at least talk to City Council about a little bit at that point, because I know this is weighing. This is on the hit list for 2020.
Right.
So.
Okay, great. Thanks to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us in, Lynn.
Have a great winter season. See you out there on the trails. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, All our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.